Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration.com. You can personalize your fueling and hydration strategy so you perform at your best with 15% off your first order of electrolytes and carbohydrate fuel with the code OXYGEN24 at Precision Fuel and Hydration.com. Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Coach Rob Wilby, and every week we bring you an episode of this podcast to help motivate and inspire you for your triathlon goals for this season. Listen, a couple of quick things you could do for us before we jump into today's episode. If you do like this episode, please consider following us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And also, if you're watching on YouTube, if you could like and subscribe, that would really help out the growth of the show. It helps the show get shown to more people by the algorithm on the podcast players and on YouTube. So we'd really, really appreciate that. And secondly, if you're looking for help and advice with your triathlon training, please consider getting in touch with us. You can read all about what we offer at teamoxygenaddict.com. And then you can email us at help@oxygenaddict.com. Or there's a link in the show notes to book a call with me or one of the coaching team. We can discuss how we can best help you out with your triathlon goals for this season. This week, we're going to be talking about training for Ironman and 70.3 again. And this week in particular, we're going to be giving a specific overview of the race-specific training phase for both Ironman and for 70.3. Now, if you're new to the show, if this is your first episode or first episode on YouTube, go back and watch the previous episode where we've talked about the overview of winter training, the reason we did winter training the way we did, the way we set it up, the kind of changes to your fitness that happened during the winter phase. I want to focus this week very much on going forwards and saying, if you've been working with us or following our kind of plan, you've built that engine size already. How are we now going to change our training and make it really specific to an Ironman or to a 70.3? Even if you haven't been following our kind of training over the winter, this is a great place to have as your on-ramp onto training for your race-specific part of your training. I'm looking, in the way I'm recording this at the moment, I'm thinking that most of our athletes who are listening are going to be somewhere in the region of 16 to 12 weeks out away from an Ironman or 8 to 12 weeks out from a 70.3. That's usually the phase of training or the distance out from the event where we shift in a phase of training away from doing really hard work on the bike and trying to build our engine size into our race-specific preparation phase, where we're really looking at helping you and increase your endurance in a specific way that's going to help you complete either your 70.3 or your Iron distance race. And that's really the challenge to bear in mind here. Both of these events, when we watch them on the TV or on YouTube, and we watch professionals take part in them, those men and women are racing the events. They're racing each other. They're pushing themselves as hard as they possibly can to get to the finish line. And we have to accept that for the majority of age groupers, the race experience for these distances is going to be very different. It's not about developing the capacity and training to push yourself really hard. It's about developing the capacity and training to train in a way that's as specific to you and the way you're going to race as possible. And for most of us, especially at the Iron Distance event, I would say all of us listening at the Iron Distance event, it is not about how fast or hard you can go. It's purely about how long you can keep going without slowing down at the end. And every year, the people who are successful from either just completing the event all the way through to qualifying for Kona, they're the people who slow down the least. And that's, if you like, that's the framework within which I want you thinking about what we're talking about today. How can we structure your training so that we develop a body and we develop a fueling system for our body that helps prevent us slow down on race day, stops us getting slower and slower as the race goes on? Because that's going to be the case with almost all first timers. And it's a big challenge for people who've done one or more of these before as well. Now, before we go any further, I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration. If you've not heard of them before, I encourage you to go to their website, precisionfuelandhydration.com. They've got a free fuel and hydration planning tool on the website, and it'll help you get a free personalized strategy for your next race. It'll help you get a plan for your own carbohydrate, electrolyte, and fluid needs, so you can refine your own strategy during training and then deliver it on race day. No surprises. you'll be able to go out and have a fantastic race there with the appropriate amount of both fluids, electrolytes, and carbohydrate to help keep you going. Can't stress this enough. Success at long course triathlon is as much about getting the fueling right on race day, getting your electrolytes and hydration right, especially if it's particularly hot, as it is about having got your training right in the run up to it. And every year we hear horror stories from people who have spent hundreds of hours in the run up to this, possibly thousands of hours in the run up, preparing for the event. And then it goes wrong through something that's preparable for, i.e. having a fueling strategy, a hydration strategy, and an electrolyte strategy. The guys and girls over at Precision Fuel and Hydration, they are the best in the business. They've been with the podcast now for close to 10 years. They're an awesome company. They make fantastic products. They've got electrolytes in different strengths that'll match you and the needs of your events and the needs of the weather on the day. But they've also got gels, chews, drink mixes, everything you need for carbohydrate as well. So they've got a complete solution. If you've got no idea how much of carbohydrate, fluid, or electrolytes you need on race day, they are a really good starting point. In fact, it goes as far as to say they are the best starting point. You can go there and work out the baseline of what you need to be doing in training, try it in training, adjust it in training. So by the time your race day comes along, brilliant, you've got it absolutely dialed. So remember, you can use the code OA23 at checkout at precisionfuelandhydration.com. You can get 15% off your first order of electrolytes and carbohydrate over there. But yeah, go and check them out. Absolutely love the team, love the company. They're a great bunch of people and they make fantastic products. Okay, that said, word from our sponsors done. Tick that off for the day. That said, we can now move on to talking about how we are going to approach your race-specific training phase. So a quick recap of the last episode. Over winter, what we've been doing is having you do a lot of hard specific work on the bike, trying to make your engine size bigger, increase your functional threshold, allow you to put out more power at a given effort level. And so that means as you move from training indoors predominantly over the winter to riding outdoors in the springtime and as we get closer to your race, what you're going to find is compared to the you from last year, you are going to be going faster for the same effort level. That's essentially what training really hard on the bike does. It allows you to go faster for the same effort level, for the same relative percentage of your ability, you'll be traveling faster. And that's really important for addressing for both 70.3 and Ironman, because when it comes to how fast you're going to go on race day, it's largely going to be determined by that factor of how big your engine has got, and then how effective and how efficient we can now make your engine over the coming between 8 and 16 weeks in the lead up to your race specific training phase. And that's really what our focus of attention is going to shift towards now. We're going to be looking at increasing your endurance. And in simple terms, that just means taking you from wherever you are at the minute in terms of how long you can run and ride and swim for, and getting you to the point that you're comfortable completing the race distances of either an Ironman or a 70.3. The secondary goal of this is going to be to make your body more efficient at fueling and use a larger proportion of fat to fuel rather than carbohydrates. And the reason for that, without going into too much physiology, is that we've all got more than enough fat stores on our body to fuel us through an Ironman. Even the leanest of pro triathletes have got more than enough fat stored to fuel us through a triathlon. However, we can only store somewhere in the region of 2,000 or 2,500 calories worth of carbohydrate. To put that into perspective, most of us are going to be burning between 600 to 800 calories an hour when we are exercising either on the swim, the bike, or the run. So you can do the maths there and say, if we make it a nice round number, 800 calories an hour. If all those calories come from carbohydrate, we've got about 3 hours worth of exercise in us before all the carbohydrate in the body is used up. And one of two things is going to happen. We're either going to have to stop exercising or we're going to have to slow down dramatically. So a large part of your training for Ironman is going to be around helping your body learn to be more efficient at choosing to use the body fat you've got stored as a fuel and small amounts of carbohydrate to help supplement that so that we can effectively protect the amount of carbohydrate you've got stored in your body so you can use it on the run. And I think that's important to sort of draw the comparison differently there. it's a lot easier to fuel on the bike than it is running. It's a lot easier to carry it on the bike than it is running. It's easier to absorb it on the bike than it is running. So the more of that body stored carbohydrate we can protect for the run, the easier time you're going to have of it on the run. And if we are really blunt about this, there's only a certain amount of calories from carbohydrate you can absorb per hour. And it's roughly in the region of 250 to 300 calories per hour for most normal, average, untrained people. You can eat more than that, but your body's not going to absorb it in that hour. So this, you can start to do the maths here and have this bit of a conundrum that if we can only absorb, say, 300 calories an hour of carbohydrates, we've only got 2,500 calories of carbohydrates stored. You can see that we have to rely on at least half of the calories for this event coming from our fat stores. And the better we can make our body at processing these fat stores as we're training, the more efficient, and by that I mean the more energy per hour you can get from your fat stores, the more energy you get from the fat stores and the less energy you're going to need from carbohydrate. Essentially, this is an energy limited sport and an energy supply limited sport, much more than it is by a fitness limited sport. And I think, and I'm quite confident in saying this, this is one of the reasons why we see often short course athletes who can be incredibly fit and have, you know, very, very fast 25-mile time trial times, very fast 5K, 10K run speeds, very fast 1,500-meter swim speeds. They can come into 70.3 in Ironman, and at 70.3, they often have a lot of success. Their event's maybe 4 hours long at the very top level. We've got 3 hours worth of carbohydrates. Again, it's not really a fuel-limited event. When it gets to Ironman, even for the very, very top pro, say that, you know, the men are, say, doing 8 hours and the women are doing 9 hours, we are still looking at a significant portion of that event has to be fueled by fat. And I think that's one of the reasons sometimes short course athletes really struggle when they get onto the run. They have a great swim, they have a great ride, and then they detonate almost entirely as they start the run. Now, the obvious examples here are our Norwegians at the moment, but they're very much the exception to the rule that was people come over from short course and have a very hard time of it for the first few Ironman races. So it's largely about getting this fueling right in training, getting our bodies used to the amount of fuel and the fuel mix in training. And that's one of the big things that's going to now be focused on in our training block. So how do we make our bodies more effective and more efficient at burning fat? In simple terms, the way we're going to do this is by doing endurance training. There's no special secret method here. There's no imaginary laboratory you've got to go to. For most people listening to this, if you are riding your bike in the middle of zone 2 heart rate, or if you're riding your bike and you can hold a conversation with somebody else, or you're riding a bike and you're somewhere under the 60 to 65% of your FTP, you're going to be almost primarily able, at least, to fuel that almost primarily from fat. And that's the kind of level we want you training at, particularly on the bike, because the more you hang out around that level, the more that level gradually rises in terms of numbers of calories your body can get from fat per hour, if you like. As we hang out around that kind of, I'm going to use the word threshold here, and I don't mean it in the context of functional threshold heart rate. It's just a point where something changes. If you can hang out around that point where your body is getting the maximum energy from fat per minute, it's gradually going to learn to get better at this, and your body is going to learn to get more energy per hour from the stored fat as is possible. This is why it'll go some way to explaining, I think, that question of why do I have to go out and have a relatively easy long ride? Surely I'd get more fitness benefit. I can push much harder for a 3-hour ride than I am doing in training. Surely I would get fitter faster if I did that. Surely I would get fitter faster if me and my friends raced each other's up hills, or if we sprinted for road signs. A lot of the things that has traditionally crossed over from the kind of training that cycling clubs would do in the winter to keep things interesting. The reason we don't want you doing that is there's a lot of evidence that once we do a really hard, intense burst of effort during a long session like that, our body will have to shift over towards more of a carbohydrate supply. And if you push too hard for too long, effectively your body switches off this fat supply and switches over to carbohydrate. And it's very hard to come back from that. So we want to really try and limit the amount of really hard efforts you do. And the perfect long ride in this phase of training is one where you don't do any hard efforts. We want you just hanging out around that aerobic zone in the middle of zone two for the entire ride, having a chat with your friends. It is not cheating. It's not lazy. It's not a weaker or worse session than someone who's doing extra efforts in there at all. It is the most specific kind of training that you can do for Ironman training. And it'll be really, really beneficial as well for our 70.3 athletes. So that's the first thing I want to get across. That's the reason and the underpinning of shifting towards almost all of our work that we're doing now being focused on longer, steady sessions in the long endurance session. We're trying to get our bodies to be better and more efficient at processing that fat and getting energy from fat per hour. So how does the training change? Number one, on the bike, this long ride becomes our absolute key number one priority of every week, and trying to keep the power under control becomes the key for that. The little caveat here is if you're doing an event like, I don't know, Ironman UK, Ironman Wales, Lanzarote, something where there's a lot of challenging hills on the course, as we get closer to the goal event, we are going to introduce some harder efforts into your training on the long ride to help replicate how training is going to be. But it's very important to recognize that if you are doing a hard, hilly Ironman, the more you can control your power on race day, the less your body is going to try and shift to carbohydrates, and ultimately the more success you're going to have. So we are going to try and have a big block of steady training early on to really try and fire up these fat burning metabolisms. So that's what our key session looks like. Our supporting sessions for both Ironman and 70.3, we're going to split these up. One of them is going to be a steady session that's going to have some big gear work in. And by big gear, what I mean is, we're going to be pushing a bigger gear than usual at a lower cadence than usual, producing more force in our muscles. An old way of thinking about this would be to say it's a strength session. We're developing leg strength. But I mean strength in this capacity as able to push a bigger gear than usual at a lower cadence than usual. And it's replicating the kind of rolling hills that you might get when you're out riding, where your cadence slows down by 10 or 15 revolutions a minute and you don't want to change gear. It's just getting your body used to pushing that and help develop that specific force in your quads. Our other session that we're going to do is still going to be, it's going to be our one interval session of the week, effectively. We're not going to do it at 100% of FTP. Typically, we'll do it at sweet spot, which is about 90%. So like a comfortably hard tempo effort on the bike. And we'll move toward doing longer efforts rather than shorter efforts. So perhaps where our FTP efforts were up to a maximum of 10 minutes long, our sweet spot efforts are going to get to the point where they're about 20 minutes long. So they're a long, sustained effort, but at a sub-maximal, you know, they're nowhere near as hard as FTP would be. And although 90% of FTP, I know it sounds like it's almost 100%, the difference in feel is amazing. The drop of 10% means you can go for much, much longer than you could riding at 100% of FTP. Okay. So that's really the bigger picture of bike training. That's how we're going to shift. Your one thing to remember here is protect at all costs your ability to do your long ride every week. And that long ride is going to be the thing that teaches your body how to improve and how to get better at fat burning as we go along. Now then, runs. We'll give an overview of our run training. Obviously, the big challenge for Ironman and 70.3 athletes is being able to continue to run long enough that you can complete the entire marathon or half marathon without being forced to stop and walk. At 70.3, most people find that they can grind a run out. It's really common for our first-time Iron athletes to be out there and to be faced with a long walk home of 10 or 15 miles because they're just done. The fitness is used up. The fuel supply is used up. They're just really tired and they can't make themselves run anymore. They have a long walk for home. This is the number one thing that is my mission to help people avoid when they're racing Ironman. I don't want you having to walk. I want you being able to choose to take walk breaks along the way for a strategic reason, but I want you being able to deliver the Ironman run that you're capable of doing. So first and foremost, Our aim of our run training is to, again, increase your endurance, increase your ability gradually, week by week, to add on some time onto your long run so that we build the duration from probably coming out of our winter block, maybe you're running 60, 75 minutes. We're going to increase over the next 4 weeks to be comfortable at 90 minutes. We're going to increase over the next 4 weeks after that to be comfortable around 2 hours before pushing on eventually to get to the point where you'll be comfortable running for 3 hours in the run-up. That'll be your longest run before your Ironman. And that holds true for someone who's a pro athlete or someone who is going to be fighting the cutoff and doing 7 or 8 hours on the marathon. 3 hours of running and training seems to be about the maximum anyone can do and recover from in time to do meaningful training 2 days later. And that's the key here. Don't think about these sessions individually. Think about your training plan across 12, 16, 20 weeks. Your consistency of training on a day-by-day basis is the thing that's going to allow you to be able to deliver a really good performance on race day. And so it's not about saying, I'm going to go out and do a 7 or 8 hour run because I know that's what I'll have to do on race day. That's just going to leave you in a massive hole for the next week or 2 weeks. It's about doing the longest run you need to and can still recover from in 2 days, ready to train again the next week. So the phase we're at the moment, as we're shifting into our race-specific training phase, this four-week block, for Iron athletes, we're going to be extending the run to 90 minutes, maybe 1 hour 45. And for our 70.3 athletes, we're going to be extending up to about 90 minutes. That's our key run of the week. It's going to be done as a 9 minutes run, 1 minute walk. And the benefits of that are, A, you will not get sore legs the day after the run, and B, you'll feel fresh enough to train again 2 days after this long run. There's going to be no more of those long runs causing you fatigue that takes you 4 days to get over. The 1 minute walk break is really, really important, allowing you to recover in time to go and train again. The other big benefit of training like this is it's specific to race day. You're going to have to go past an aid station every mile or mile and a half on race day. About every 10 minutes, there's going to be the opportunity to take either a drink or a gel or some food or something similar. And you're going to have to be able to do it. And it's much easier to do that walking than it is running. So we're going to practice those walk breaks in training as well. The second part of our run training that's important here, as well as that key long run, we're going to have you do 2 more runs every week. Those runs are going to be, think of them as supporting your body in terms of durability. I don't ever want to hear someone's just done 1 run of a week. Even if it's, you know, I just did the 1 long run, I would rather you break up that time into 3 shorter runs, honestly, than do that 1 long run. Because the durability aspect that comes from running every other day is a massive factor in your ability to run well on race day, especially at Ironman. So the 2 supporting runs, even though they're only at easy pace, they're very, very important as well, and they shouldn't be overlooked. They're not an optional extra. They are something that needs doing week in and week out. We need you running 3 times a week. And as we approach our race, as we get closer in the last 8 weeks, we'll even add in a 4th shorter run off the bike on some weekends as well. So we'll be running 4 times a week at that point. That 4th run might only be very short, but again, very, very important for increasing durability and giving you the confidence that you'll be able to run well off the bike. Now, swimming. Our overview for swimming is that things are going to change in terms of, rather than our winter focus of purely focusing on improving your technique, now is the time we're going to start working on improving your endurance and really improving your swim fitness. So up until this point, my message has very much been, use the time you've got to make your technique as good as you can. The subtle shift now is your most important swim of the week, your key swim, is going to be your endurance swim. And we're gradually going to extend the length of this endurance swim between now and race day so that you can comfortably complete the distance come race day. So for iron distance races, that's going to look like getting your swim up into the region of 2,500 to 3,000 meters during this block, 16 weeks to 12 weeks out. For our 70.3 athletes, it's going to look like getting the swim into the 1,500 meters to 2,000 meters range. We're not going to have you do that key endurance swim all in one go as a straight swim. We're going to break it up every 100 meters and have a 3 to 5 second break after each 100. That's just going to let your body rest and reset. And often the form falling apart aspect that happens with swimmers happens because the smaller muscles get fatigued first, and kind of they're the ones that contribute most to our technique. If they've gone, there's no point you keeping on swimming. Take the short break, let them recover, and then you'll practice swimming with good form. If you're just practicing swimming with poor form, unfortunately, what that means is you're just embedding that poor technique. We want you, wherever you possibly can, thinking about swimming with perfect form and taking a short break if you can feel you're getting really tired, so that the next 100 is practicing perfect form again. So that's our key swim of the week, and that's gradually going to increase in distance across the weeks. Our other two swims, one of them is going to be a technique and threshold speed based swim. But the most important part of this is we're going to get those swim drills done to help keep reinforce the importance of getting that technique correct and embedding that correct technique. Think of it like a golfer doing swing drills. They're constantly doing this. If you watch any kind of golfing program, the pros are out the morning of the event practicing their swing and breaking it down into short little bits. We need you doing this with your swim as well. So that's going to be the important thing that helps embed those changes that you've made. And our third swim of the week is going to be a recovery swim. And it's going to be really, really easy. It's going to be like a free massage for your body. Question we often commonly get asked is, should we be open water swimming yet? Or when should we be open water swimming? And the answer is, it depends largely where you live in the world and what the climate's like. I personally don't think as a coach there's any point getting you into the open water until the temperature is such that you can swim proper, facing the water, front crawl, or freestyle, without the temperature of the water being the thing that is stopping you from doing it. So in the UK, if you're racing in a summer race in the UK, you're not going to be able to get into the open water until probably 8 weeks before the event happens itself, because the water will just be too cold. If you are lucky enough to live in a place where the open water is warm enough, or you can happily endure the open water, happy for you to do your key endurance swim in the open water. But just remember that the nature of doing the key swim in the pool is you get a break every 100 meters. It's hard to do that if you're swimming in open water. And as we get closer to our race event, we're going to gradually increase the length of those intervals, and we'll have you swim 500s, we'll have you swim 1,000s. Eventually, we'll have you swim the whole distance of the event all in one go. But we want to build up to that, and we want to, if you like, stop that form fatigue happening in the early days. So there's no reason for you having to get into open water just yet. I would say the last 6 to 8 weeks before the event are the key point. You want to be having one of your swims a week in the open water. Now, we've talked about swim, bike, and run. The next thing we need to talk about is building in recovery and rest into the week. Because I think, although we focused on talking about swim, bike, and run already, the most important part of your week is building in your recovery and rest day first. It doesn't have to be a total rest day, but it needs to be a day where whatever activities you do are such that you feel more recovered at the end of it than you do at the start of it. For new athletes, for first timers, that's almost always going to be a complete rest day. For people who've got much higher levels of fitness, or people who swam as a kid, you can have an easy swim as a recovery session and feel better at the end of it. So if that's the case, great, use that easy swim. But if there's any hint of extra fatigue after that swim, I'd rather you had a rest day. And that really is the most important day of the week, because it's when all those training sessions in the previous week get absorbed, and it's when your fitness level moves up. If you keep on training, you're just going to train yourself into the ground. And if you're a person who needs to train every day, that's great. I get that. But let's make sure that one of those days a week is, when you check in with yourself, it is honestly focused on making sure that you are more recovered at the end of it than at the start of it, whatever that might look like. Another key tip here, and we'll talk more about this a little bit later on, make sure you're getting enough sleep every day. That's the absolute key to recovering from the daily training sessions. The biggest performance enhancing drug that any amateur athlete can take is actually an extra hour of sleep every night. Loads of great hormones get released in sleep and help you recover. So if you're not getting at least 7 hours of sleep a night, and ideally 8, get yourself to bed earlier to facilitate more of that recovery happening. Strength and conditioning during this phase is purely there to support the activities that you're doing. We've moved away from looking at improving the strength and improving the conditioning of your body. We're going to really focus in now on the purpose of it is just to support where you are. So if you are currently in the position of having no niggles. You're doing enough strength and conditioning to keep yourself in that position. If you currently have niggles that need rehabbing or prehabbing, your strength and conditioning is there to support those niggles going away so that you can train fully. So it's much less about thinking about going in the gym and lifting weights and throwing iron and dumbbells around, much more about body weight activities, much more about flexibility than strength, if you like. Support your body's ability to do the sports you want to do rather than adding extra tiredness and fatigue in for the wrong reasons. Now, something that we're starting to look at using with our athletes is what else can you do other than training in order to get fitter and more prepared for your event? So as well as exercise, here are some of the things you need to be thinking about. I've mentioned their sleep. If you're not getting 7 hours of sleep a night and ideally 8, you need to make that your first priority as the things that are going to help your performance come race day. It's going to be much, much more effective than buying a set of carbon wheels or an aero helmet or a new skin suit. So make it really important. Pay attention to what you're eating. Improve the quality of your healthy diet. Try and increase the amount of real food that you're eating and reduce the amount of processed food that you're eating. So the quality of the stuff that you're eating is literally the quality of the food that you're going to have for this event. So really focus in on making some changes that are going to help. It's time to consider either massively cutting down on alcohol consumption, skipping alcohol days, or cutting alcohol out altogether until your event. There's no two ways around this. The science is coming back more and more conclusive that any amount of alcohol consumed is A, not good for your body, B, not good for your recovery, and C, detrimental to your training. So I grew up in a generation that was told men can drink, I can't remember what it was, 22 units a week and women can drink 14 units. We're now down into the single figures. And I think for athletes, there's no two ways around this. Just cut the alcohol out as much as you possibly can, because if you're doing all this hard work in training, you want to be getting the benefits of it. And the last thing to think about is, what can you do during the day or towards the end of the day that helps you de-stress and reduce the amount of stress in your life, whether it's some yoga, some meditation, using a Headspace app, reading a quiet book, anything that you can help to reduce the amount of stress in your body and in your life is going to be a massive, massive help to you. So pick something there that you can do that's going to help decrease the amount of stress in your life. And that is also going to contribute to how quickly you recover from the training that you're doing. Now then, a couple of things to really reiterate around having a training plan. Training plans are great when everything is growing great, but things are going to get in the way. There is going to be some disruption to your perfectly laid out training plan between now and your race, whether that's because you've got social events on, whether it's because your family have social events on, whether it's because you end up picking up a cold, you get ill, you get injured along the way. There is going to be some disruption along the way. Now, with athletes we coach, I'm going to say this, that's okay. I have built contingency time into your plan so that I expect everyone to have a couple of weeks in the last 20 weeks where things don't go to plan. There's plenty of time to comfortably extend the duration and the length of these workouts so that you'll be in great shape. You don't need to panic. Similarly, if you're going away on a holiday for a week and you're not going to be able to train, totally understandable. Don't feel as though you have to if you're going abroad and you're going on a safari. Obviously, the more you can keep doing while you're away, the better. But it isn't the end of the world if you have to have a week off. If you're going away skiing, you can't really do anything meaningful while you're away skiing because you're so tired from the skiing. So don't try and add extra stress on top of it by doing swim, bike, and run training on top of it as well. Just accept that when you come back, there's going to be a little bit of readjustment to do, and that's okay. And then you can move on with the plan. But this is really important. In my experience, a plan doesn't go smoothly for anybody, for any athlete. No athlete completes their 16-week training plan without something going wrong. And yet everybody feels like everybody else gets to. So let me reassure you, it doesn't happen for anybody. The people who are going to succeed here are the people who are the most resilient and the most flexible and can get around these problems, not the ones who don't have any problems. So if things get in the way, illness, social stuff, whatever, work-related things, that's okay. Sit back, make a plan, be flexible, readjust what you've got to do. There's plenty of time yet before your events, and just keep yourself on track. So there's plenty of time to get around all that kind of stuff. Now, last thing to talk about is we mentioned the importance of fueling hydration and electrolytes early on. Especially at Ironman, I can't stress this enough, it is a fueling limited event, an energy limited event, much more than a fitness limited event. And it is possible to go out and do all of your long runs without even taking a bottle of water with you. You'll get back thirsty after the longest long runs for sure, but you can do it, but you will not be training your body for the way it will have to run on race day, because you're starting your run already really depleted and probably a bit dehydrated. You are going to have to drink from the first mile. You are going to have to take in 300 calories of carbohydrates every hour from the first mile. So practice doing that in training. Your runs become a chance to practice fueling. And if the reality is you don't like running with the feeling of a bottle in your hand, you're going to have to get used to it, or you're going to have to find another solution. You're going to have to hide a little bottle somewhere, or get one of those little vests that allows you to carry it, or a camelback or whatever. But you are going to have to find a way to drink fluids with electrolytes of the appropriate strength in, and to eat carbohydrate calories or consume carbohydrate calories while you are cycling and running. And my advice to you is use the longest sessions as a way to get used to doing this. So it is really common to go out on a long bike ride with a group and see nobody eat anything for the first 2.5 hours. You need to get in the habit of starting to take that 300 calories an hour right from the very first hour, because that's what we're going to have to do on race day. And gastric emptying can be trained and is trained. So get into the habit of doing it as you go along. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to have to plan in places to stop to restock when you're out on a long bike ride. That's totally normal. Going to a service station to get water or Coke or whatever, that is something you are going to have to plan into your rides. Similarly, having drinks, having a way to get drinks, having a way to get carbohydrates during your run, you're going to have to find a way to plan that in, whether it's running loops around your house and stopping to get them, or picking them up from a little box by the front door, or whatever that is. But you cannot expect success at these distances if you don't prepare your body for the fact that you're going to have to learn to digest stuff as you are exercising all the time. So the sooner you start to plan this into your long rides, the better, the more success you're going to have. Okay, then. That brings us to the end of this week's episode. So here are some discount codes and deals for you. Over at precisionfuelandhydration.com, use the code OXYGEN24 for 15% off your first electrolyte order. And over at teamoxygenaddict.com, I think we've got the most comprehensive triathlon coaching program for busy age groupers. If you've enjoyed what you've heard today and the advice has helped you out, well, great stuff. I hope that's helped put some of your fears at rest. And I know from some of the calls we've had, it's helping raise the right questions in the minds of people as to whether their current coaching relationship is working for them. If you're looking for a change, or if you're looking for high quality proven coaching for Ironman or 70.3 triathlon this year, you can just check out the details of our coaching packages on our website at teamoxygenaddict.com. And then if you're interested, there's a link in the show notes below. You can join our waiting list and you'll be notified if a slot becomes available. And at that point, you'll have a chance to book a call with us and see if you'd be a good fit for joining the team. So although we don't have slots available at the moment, we'll make those call appointments available to people as and when we do have athletes who end their coaching packages during the season, if and when that happens. So remember, there's links in the show notes, so you don't have to remember them. Till next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Podcast. See ya.